All right, continuing with Perek Beis of Sefer Nehemiah. So we've met our hero already 2 weeks ago. And last week he went into the king's chambers and basically said, my people, my land, the land of my ancestors is in ruins. I'd really love to go and help out there for a little bit and build the wall. And he gets permission eventually to go through a combination of clever planning and guile, as well as hashkacha, that God sort of arranged things so that it should work out well and that he should be answered. We touch on a couple of side questions in that, like the reference to the queen. Right? It mentions, oh, the queen was there. So we discussed whether she was one of Nehemiah's benefactors, someone in the king's court who was particularly amenable to helping out. We note a lot of parallels to Esther, right? Esther also goes into the king's chambers, makes a major request. The queen in that story has a major role. And we drew some comparisons and contrasts to Nehemiah in terms of the leadership style, in terms of what it tells us about the role of non-Jewish kings. And then we saw how Nehemiah makes his way to Eretz Israel. And this seems like a good place to pick up, even though we've probably already discussed a little bit about the background, but we should probably pick up at source number 15 and the description of Nehemiah's arrival and the sort of first, inklings of opposition to Nehemiah's project that would eventually grow over the next couple of prakim. So Nehemiah, with his permission to travel from the king, with his official authorization, with letters from the king that he'll be able to bring, as well as the king donating some funds, some of the wood, to the construction of the walls of Yerushalayim. Nehemiah shows up, he arrives, I arrived there, I gave them the letters of the king that gave me authorization to do what I'm about to do. And he was escorted with an escort. We noted that Ezra did not have an escort, because Ezra, in his religious space, he couldn't be seen as someone who needed a royal escort. But Nehemiah was a politician, as well as being a religious figure, and so it was more natural he should get a royal kind of escort. Then he, at this point, the opposition kind of rears its head for the first time. Vayishma Sanballat HaChoroni. Sanballat the Choroni, Vetovya HaEved HaAmoni, Tovya the Ammonite servant. Well, remind ourselves what we said about that phrase last week. Heard that Nehemiah had arrived. Vayira LeHemra Agdola. They heard it was very bad to them. They thought this was a really terrible development. Asher ba adam levakish tovali bnei Yisrael. It was bad to them that someone was doing good for us, right? Tov and ra, we noted our major words in this parak. And this is just an example of that. And we discussed last time, and I think this may have been the last thing we did, that Sanballat and Tovia aren't just nobodies. Right? Sanballat we saw, and we have evidence both in Tanakh for this and outside of Tanakh for this, in letters that we found in the Jewish community in Elephantine in Egypt, which is, roughly contemporaneous with some of these stories, that Sanballat is a major leader, a governor, really, of the Shomronim, of the Samaritans, who are north of the Jewish settlement, which is currently in Yerushalayim, so the Shomronim are living further north, and Sanballat is the head of them, and he's someone who is well-connected with the elites, even among the Jewish people. So we saw that at the very end of Nehemiah, we'll find out that the descendants of the Kohen Gadol, in source number 17, had intermarried with the descendants of Sanballat, right? So this is someone who's really tied in with the royal families. And his children have sort of Jew-ish sounding names. Dat Mikra noted that we have letters that talk about his children being named Delaya, Shalamya, having those, the term is Theophoric? I'm forgetting the precise term, but names that have God, that have Hashem's name in them. So when your name ends with Kel or Ka, so that shows that you're someone who recognizes Hashem, Ka, Kel, as God. So we noted that he's a major figure. We noted that Tovia will appear later on as a major figure as well. So when we say he's an Eved HaAmoni, maybe we're insulting him, but Eved probably means something like, servant of the king, like a high officer, a minister of the king, and not a lowly slave. It might be a bit of an insulting term for that, but it probably really refers to that kind of social station. And I think the very last thing we said last time was that this is very reminiscent of the previous opposition that we had to building up the Beit HaMikdash, right? Now we're talking about building the walls of the Mikdash. Back in the early chapters of Sefer Ezra, we had opposition to building the Beit HaMikdash itself. And we had these Tzarei Yehuda uBinyamin who wanted to participate. And we said, no, you can't. We don't want your kind of foreign worship being integrated with and infiltrating the Beit HaMikdash. So we're going to oppose them. And then they opposed us. They got the king, whoever it was, to stop the building process temporarily, and only later on did we get further authorization to come and to continue building the Beit HaMikdash. And this is all very reminiscent, right? We have other kinds of enemies who are also probably sort of Jew-esque, Jew-ish, Jew-adjacent populations who are opposing our intended construction project. Now, unlike an earlier situation, they don't ask for permission to participate. Right, in Ezra and Perek Gimel, the enemies wanted to join with us in building the Beit HaMikdash properly. Here, Sanballat and Tovia don't, as we'll see at the end of this parak, don't want to join in with the project. They're not saying, you're building the walls of Jerusalem, great, let's get involved. They're pushing back against it. They think that'll be too good for the welfare of the Jews, not helpful to them, and in a way that they're going to end up opposing. So the Dot Mikra thinks that Choroni is a reference to Beit Choron, which is north of... and we know from other sources that he's a Samaritan, one of the Shomronim, and they lived in the area of the northern kingdoms of Israel. So they're close, and the fact that you have close enemies will prove to be a problem. Right? Well, I think we'll get to today, the beginning of Perek Gimel, we'll talk about Nehemiah's work building the walls and what areas in particular of the city the walls need to be built most strongly probably reflects the kinds of enemies that we're dealing with. But I think we said what we need to say about that, about these potential enemies and whether they're sort of related or not related to the earlier enemies. So let's continue. So he arrives at Yerushalayim. Va'avo al Yerushalayim, va'hisham yamim shlosha. Who else arrived at Yerushalayim and waited for 3 days? Ezra. A few weeks ago, right? This is another parallel, right? We could really write the whole book just of drawing the connections between what Ezra did and what Nehemiah did. So Nehemiah is very much following in those footsteps. When does he arrive? The pasuk doesn't say, but the Dan Mikra does the math based on other psukim in the Sefer, and concludes in source number 24, Va'avo min ha'amur lahalan vav tet vav, later on in Perek Vav, in which it describes that the construction of the wall was finished in the 25th day of Elul, which was 52 days after it had begun, apparently. You can look at source number 19 if you want to see the pasuk, but regardless, so the Dot Mikra extrapolates from that, Shenechemia bal Yerushalayim berosh chodesh av, the first day of the month of Av, Be'etzem hayom shebo ba Ezra lefanav. So we're drawing yet another connection between Ezra and Nehemiah. They arrive the same day, they wait the same amount of time. This is the pattern of Jewish leadership in this period. And for everything we said about Ezra, we might want to extrapolate to Nehemiah. Coming in the month of Av, and it being now a season of rebuilding as opposed to of destruction, is certainly one theme. By Ezra, there was reference also to Aaron HaKohen, who died on the first of Av. Now, Nehemiah, we have no reason to think is a Kohen. Ezra was a Kohen. But some of those connections might still be relevant here. So Nehemiah arrives. He waits 3 days. Maybe that's the time it takes just to settle down from a long journey. And then he gets to work. And his work is actually really interesting. There's sort of a mainstream way to understand what he's doing. And then Rashi has a very interesting, slightly different interpretation, which is also quite interesting. So we'll see how they're both described. Va'akum laila, I arose at night. So this was the night, presumably a few days after he arrived. So now it's he arrived on the first of Av. Let's say it's the night of the fourth of Av. Ani va'anashim ma'at imi, I went with a few other people. V'lo igadati la'adam ma'alokai noten alibi la'asot li'rushalayim. I didn't tell anyone what God had placed in my heart to do for Yerushalayim. It's all very secretive. A very quiet, clandestine mission happening at night, so no one should see. Uvehema inimi. And there was no animal. Ki'im havehema asherani rochiva. Only one animal, right? Because what would happen if you brought animals with you on this journey? If anyone was riding horses, it would make quite a ruckus, and people might find out that I'm there scouting out the walls. And he went and he actually describes the process of analyzing these walls. We'll look at the map in just a minute. I gave you a map in source number 29. We'll get there. But let's just see how it's described here in the Psukim first. I went out by the gate of the valley. We'll see where that is in just a moment. The El Pene Ein Hatanin, and I turned towards Ein Hatanin, the spring. The Al Shar HaAshpot, that he's sover b'chamot Yerushalayim, and I was sover the walls of Yerushalayim. Sover is an important term. We'll come back to it. But what should it mean right now? Simple reading. Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for asking. I'm on top of page number 5. We're back in the Psukim source 15, so we'll be a little bit back and forth with the Psukim in the commentaries. I'd keep one finger here. Thank you. So Pasuk 13, the very first Pasuk, the full Pasuk on that page. Nehemiah says, I was sover b'chamot Yerushalayim. I was, whatever sover means, the translation here says, viewing. I was looking at the walls, trying to figure out how strong they are, how weak they are. There's going to be another way to read that very shortly. Asher him prudsim, which were broken open. Ushara ukluva esh, and the gates were consumed by fire. So the walls are not in a great state right now. They're, you know, completely open. You could climb in. Enemies could break in, walk through their open gates, and there's nothing to protect us. Va'avor al shar ha'ayin, va'abrechat ha'melech, and I went to the gate of the water, the ayin, the brook or the stream, va'abrechat ha'melech, and the pool of the king. Ve'makom lebehema la'avor tachtai, and there was no room for my animal. So maybe there was rubble in the way, made it very difficult for the animal to pass. Anyway, the walls are certainly not in a great place. Normally, to be able to go around the walls of a city would be something you'd want an animal to be able to do. If animals can't do it, then we're clearly having a mess. Vahio levanacha laila. I went up the river, up the stream, and vahi sover b'chaman. I was again sover, looking at the walls. Vashuv v'avo v'shar hagai v'ashuv. And I turned around and I went back the way I had come. So now's a good time to first stop and just look at the description of where he had went, and then we'll try to understand what exactly he was doing out here. Because I think there are two ways to explain what he's doing. So let's first turn to page 9, where I give you a map of the walls, and it's also a map of the walls that are going to be built in Perek Gimel, but right now we're less interested in that. And we can see in the bottom left corner of that map that Shar Hagai, which is where Nehemiah departed Yerushalayim from, was the beginning of his journey. Then the guy here is the Gei Ben Hinnom, which is the one of the valleys outside of Yerushalayim to the south. He turned and he went east along to Shar HaAshpot, then to Shar HaAyin, which is around that corner over there, a little bit up the Nachal, and you see the Nachal winding along the path on the bottom right-hand side of the map. And then at some point around there, the walls were sufficiently destroyed, it was sufficiently difficult to pass, that he had to turn around and go back the way he came. So Nehemiah is, you know, looking at the southern wall, parts of the eastern wall, and then he has to turn back and return because he wasn't able to get any more clarity or, you know, make it possible to go around the entire city. There's too much in the way. Or maybe he had seen enough already and he knew what there was to see. Either way, he turns back and he comes back the way he came. In terms of sover, so I mentioned that word, right? So what do you think Nehemiah is doing? He's walking around the walls of the city at night clandestinely with a small group of people. And we already know his agenda is to rebuild the walls. So what's he trying to do? What's the point of this mission?
Wouldn't it be to see how protected
they are? Yeah, you know, some kind of reconnaissance. You want to see, where are the walls strong? Where are the walls weak? What work are we going to need to do a little bit later? That seems to be the mainstream approach, and I think that makes the most sense. And indeed, that's probably the mainstream approach of the commentaries. Right? The goal was really just to test the walls and see how strong they were. Ibn Ezra, in source number 25, this is page 7, says that sover comes from the rabbinic Hebrew word svara. A svara is like a logical interpretation or a logical idea. He was analyzing. Milashon chachamenu svara v'atam hayiti choshev. I was thinking. Uma'ayin b'chamot. I was examining the walls. So I was already beginning the plan. And it had to be at night because if anyone saw me starting to plan out how we're going to fix the walls, they might try to stop me. And I want to, you know, get started before they're able to stop me. Malbim says similarly, he wanted to test the walls. Now, test is a little bit less clear. It could be, and he seems to understand the word sover as shover, meaning to break the wall. But the point there is still the same. You know, you sort of push on the walls, right? If you push on it and it crumbles, so you know, okay, that's a wall that really is going to need work. If you push on it and it stands, so okay, it's strong and it needs to be further fortified, but it's going to be a little bit less work. Those are two, you know, simple ways, and mainstream commentary seems to take it that way. But Rashi has a really interesting alternative. Jumping to source number 28, which is on page 8. He has a whole new interpretation, which shows just like, sort of the radical nature of what Nehemiah is trying to do here. Everyone was walking. I was riding on an animal that was just me. No one else had an animal. Why? They wanted to be subtle. No one should know. They were vandalizing the walls. They were breaking them. They wanted to increase the number of breaches there were in the wall. That way everyone, when they then made the pitch, all right, time to build the walls of the city, everyone would really recognize the gravity of the problem. They would all agree immediately to rebuild the city. That's exactly what they're doing. They're going around and they're knocking down parts of the wall. Since the wall was already burnt, it was very easy to push parts of it down. So Nehemiah is really quite a radical here. He's actually destroying the walls of Yerushalayim because he knows that it's very easy for people to kind of blind themselves to the truth. As long as the walls look good, so there's less urgency to actually get out there and do something about it. You know, look, that part of the wall is really strong. That's doing okay. We're fine here. You know, we can hold the breach if someone came to attack us. So Nehemiah has to totally demolish the wall so that then when he makes the pitch the next day, all right, time to get to work, everyone would recognize the problem, wouldn't be able to hide it. I think it's a really interesting and kind of provocative idea for what Nehemiah is trying to do. Right? He's not a gentle leader trying to prod people to do the right thing. You know, maybe it's more of an Ezra style. You know, be gentle, let people realize what needs to happen. Nehemiah says, no, you're all wrong, you're all blind to the truth, only I realize what's happening here, and so my job is to rally you to action. Whatever I need to do to make that happen, I'm going to do. It's a much more aggressive, provocative kind of approach that Nehemiah is taking to deal with this issue. And so that's in fact what he does. We'll turn back to the Pesukim and see how he rallies the people. And regardless of whether it was because of his report of the damage of the walls or because he actually caused more damage of the walls, either way, we see that it's enough to motivate the people to get started. Jumping to Pasuk Tetzayin. Vasganim, the rulers, lo yadu anahalachti. They didn't know where I had went. Pasuk Tetzayin, Pasuk 16, back on page number 5. You know, I was able to be subtle. No one knew where I had went. Uma ani osem, what I had done. V'la Yehudim, v'la Kohanim, v'la Chorim, v'la Skanim, u'l'yeter osei malacha, adkin lo igadzi. I have not yet told anyone, told the Jews, told the Kohanim, the leaders. I've told nobody what we were going to do. It's all been a secret mission, but an effective secret mission. V'omar lehem, and I told them. Atem ro'im hara'a asher anachnu va. You should see the ra'a, the bad. Again, that word comes back. You should see the terrible situation that we're in. Asher Yerushalayim chareva. The city's been destroyed. Usharad, and it's tuva esh, and the gates have been burnt with fire. Lechu v'nivnet chomat Yerushalayim v'lo nye od cherpa. Let's go build the walls of Yerushalayim. It should no longer be a cherpa. What's a cherpa? So the English is reproach, but I feel like that's not a helpful English word. Not quite sure what that means. It could be one of two things. It couldn't be a aesthetic statement. Cherpa means disgrace. And it's a real disgrace that we should be in such a lowly state. Right? The point is, you know, great countries have strong walls. And it will be greater, it will be more honorable. It could also be much more practical. The idea is if we have a breach in our walls, we'll be very vulnerable. And Kharpa here might have that sense of, don't leave a breach in your gates that will let other people invade and cause harm, like the harm that inspired me to come here in the first place, back in Perek Aleph, and like the other kind of harm that might come in the subsequent prakim if people don't listen or the wall isn't built quickly enough. And so we have to avoid this this concern, this kharpa that might happen. Again, the aesthetic damage to our reputation and the physical damage that might come. Va'agid lahem et yad elokai asher hi tova alai. We're in a bad situation, but I told them that the hand of God was good to me. Va'af divrei ha-melech asher amar li. And the words of the king, which authorized us to do this. And of course, the hand of God, which was good, is what led the king to be good to us as well. That's very much Nehemiah's point in this part of the book. Vayomru, and they said, Nakum uvaninu vayechazku yedehem letovah. We're going to get up, let's build. And they strengthened themselves letovah. The Yad Hashem was letovah, was good. And so we also kind of met that and decided to do good ourselves. And in this case, the good was building up the walls of the city. Great, this is going to be a smooth process with no complications, and everyone's going to love it. And what a great construction project that's going to work out swimmingly. No, of course not. It's going to be very controversial. And it immediately becomes controversial, and it will continue to be controversial for the next several weeks. So now a third member of this trio has arrived. A new enemy has approached. Geshem Ha'arvi, the Aravim were to the south. So that's even a little bit worse for us, because we had enemies to the north now, the Shomronim, the Sanballat, and now to the south we have Geshem Ha'arvi, so it's going to be even a little bit more complicated than we might have wanted. So they heard about this, Vayaligulanu, and they made fun of us, Vayivzu aleinu, they ridiculed and insulted us, Vayomru, Mahadavar Azesh Aratem Osim, what is this thing you're doing? Al HaMelech Atem Mordim? Are you rebelling? Right? We know that that's one of the concerns about building a wall of the city. That was part of the original concern we saw back in Perek Dalet of Ezra. If you start letting them build up, then they become harder to destroy and harder to control, and it's not a great idea. And they're already kind of planning, like, how could we use this against you? Are you rebelling against the king? Also, they're making fun of us. Like, oh, you know, it's so cute, you puny little Jews. You're going to really build up the wall of the city in a way that we can't take down. That's really adorable. You get kind of both of those senses from the Pesukim. Va'ashivo tam davar. But Nehemiah is our advocate, and he defends us and our reputation. Va'omar lehem, I said to them, Elokei ha-shamayim hu yasliach lanu. Right? Don't make fun of us. Right? And the point of making fun is twofold, right? Number one, it's sort of alluding to the harm that we're going to cause you in the future, right? If we tell the king that you're rebelling, then he might stop you. Now, Nehemiah shouldn't be bothered by that, because the king explicitly said, go and build up the walls of Yerushalayim. That's totally fine. But it also weakens morale. It weakens the enthusiasm, right? We just strengthened ourselves. Vayechazku yedehem letovah. We just rallied ourselves to actually doing what we need to do. And now they're trying to deflate our enthusiasm. So Nehemiah has to come and give us chizuk. Hashem is going to help us be successful. Vanachnu avadav, we're his servants. Nakum uvaninu, we will arise, we will build. V'lachem in chelak utzakav v'zikarum b'Yerushalayim. You will have no portion, no right, no remembrance in this city. So in other words, on a simple level, the city is ours. Don't think that you're going to be able to invade and take it over and make it your city. Not going to happen. It's our city and it will remain so forever. The language here is a little weird, though. What does it mean they have no chelak, I understand. I mean, it's not their city, it's our city. But they didn't even say they wanted the city, really. And then, staka. Right, exactly, right. You can't have it. We don't really want it. You know, it's very important to you, but to us it's not such a big deal. It could be that there's an implicit reference here to actually, maybe they do want to participate a little bit. Kind of, they don't say it explicitly in the book, but they're telling us, you know, we're not going to let you do this. And Nehemiah says, ah, I know you want to be involved in Yerushalayim, but we're not going to let you. Staka could also mean righteousness. When someone is righteous in judgment, meaning they are vindicated, in judgment is probably the better term. They're vindicated. They're told, you know, you're right in this dispute, you're wrong in this dispute. So staka is often the term that we use. We have v'hitztikyo et ha-tzadik v'hirshio et ha-rasha in judicial cases in Chumash. So you think you're righteous here, but you're not righteous. You think you're going to be right in trying to take us down, but in fact you are wrong. And with that, as Nehemiah concludes his support and the chizuk that he gives the Jewish people, and finally is going to get to work. I shouldn't say finally. He's actually moving pretty quickly, right? In Kislev, he realizes it's time to come. In Nisan, he arranges with the king. Av, he shows up. 3 days later, he's already rallying people to build. So he's moving pretty quickly. And we'll see as we go on to Perek Gimel that action is very much characteristic of Nehemiah's personality here. It's very much how he tries to get things done. So with that, let's move to Perek Gimel. I'll take this. We'll take the sources of Perek Gimel and pass them along. I'll give you an advance warning about this Perek. It's a list. Ezra and Nehemiah love their lists. So we have another list this time. This time it's a list of the people building parts of the wall and which parts of the wall everyone built. So it's going to be much easier if we have a map in front of us, which I did give us on the first couple of pages. So this will be helpful. And we're not going to get so, you know, deeply entrenched in all of the geography and where the turns of the wall are, but the map should be helpful in terms of getting a first initial impression of these walls. So we get to action. The walls we're going to see, and let's do a couple of notes of introduction before we get to the Perek itself. Number one, I gave you a map of the wall. You'll see it's very similar to the Dat Mikra map, which I also reprinted on source number 3 on the next page, so we'll compare them a little bit if we need to. And most of the places that are mentioned in the Psukim are going to be mentioned again in the description in our Perek. It's really going to go, you know, place by place, gate by gate, section by section of the wall, and tell you who was involved in each piece. I also gave from Rabbi Torchiner a description, which he cited from the Dat Mikra commentary, explaining exactly which part of which wall was named what and where it was. So we'll work on that as well. One more point to mention, and the Dat Mikra makes it very visually clear, so we actually use that map on source number 3 as a good model for us, that Nehemiah was doing two things. Right? It looks like he's doing one, but we'll see, and it's clear both from the geography but also from some of the language in our Perek, that really there's a dual agenda here. Number one is he's rebuilding the old walls. Right? You'll see on the left side of the map in source number 3, Hakav HaChomah HaRishona, the line of the original wall, the first wall that was being built. And then, right above it, Kav HaChomah HaShnia, the Kav of the second wall, or the newer wall. So Nehemiah is going to first fortify and reconstruct the walls that had originally been there, which were further south, and then expand the walls a little bit to the north. And so you have to explain why exactly he's doing that. We mentioned already, though, and we alluded to this answer before, and the Gemara in Shavuot, in source number 4, picks it up as well, which is that the north was the biggest vulnerability in the city, as it was at the time. My sense is, topographically speaking, that's true as well. It's hard to see this map that's in the Dat Mikra over here, but you might notice these tightly packed lines on the east and west side of the city that all reflect a high topography, right? So a steep incline. It's going to be harder for an invading army to climb up those sides of the city. But to the north, there's an easier terrain, so it's a little bit easier if you want to invade from the north to do so. And we know that the Shomronim are also the enemies to the north. So you want a strong wall specifically to protect yourselves from them, then you make sure to expand it a little bit to the north. And that's what the Gemara in Shavuot says. It says, you know, why did we add this section to the walls of the city? V'mnesha torpa shel Yerushalayim haita. It was the weak point of the city. V'noga hi likabesh misham. It would have been easy to conquer it. And so you need to strengthen the walls and add to the walls of the city specifically over there. And that's in the top of page number 3, if you want, in the Hebrew or the English. That's the first thing to note about our Perek, that Nehemiah is doing two things, fortifying and then building new sections of the walls. And we'll see that there's a little bit of language that's reflective of that when you get to the Perek. Number 2, before we start the Perek itself, I mentioned already that we're dealing with a list. And with all of these lists, you want to explain why it's being recorded, right? If the Pasuk just said, you know, Vayiven Vayechazek et Chomot Ha'ir, I would have understood basically what happened. So why do I need to specifically preserve not only the geography of the city, but also the names of everyone who was in particular involved in building the city? So the geography maybe makes a little bit more sense. We have a good amount of geography in Tanakh. Right? Yeshua describes the land geographically. It's just helpful to know what is included in the city, what's not. For halakhic purposes, it also matters. Any mitzvah that applies to Yerushalayim, so you might want to know what parts of the city are considered Yerushalayim. So that could be, you know, of particular import. Maybe a little bit more interesting are the names. And we can suggest sort of similar approaches that we suggested in the past, dealing with names. On the one hand, we might suggest that the point of listing everyone here was to show how significant they were. These were the great people of the community. They were the ones who really stepped up and took over and led this building project. Or it could give the impression that maybe not as many people, right? And the number of people who participated were countable. It was easy to know how many people there were involved in this building project. That's the approach that Rav Chaim Angel takes in his essay on these lists. And he quotes an interesting piece on the Dat Mikra as well. Consistent with this line of interpretation, in the middle of source number 5, 4 lines down, of Ezra 10, Mordechai Zer Kavod concludes from this list that most Jews did not participate in the rebuilding of the walls. So even though it looks like Nehemiah is really rallying everybody, again, it's really only the few, the proud, who really decide to get involved. And again, you know, to the praise of those who did, but to the detriment of those who didn't. This is why, and we'll notice this as we read the parak, several volunteers were forced to build 2 sections of the wall. There are some names that are being repeated here. So the second will describe 42, if you do the math, sections of the wall that were built. And there weren't even 42 people to spearhead the construction of 42 sections of wall. You have to have some repetition of some of the names on this list, which again really shows that there's a little bit of an enthusiasm gap. Or maybe everyone's enthusiastic, but when the rubber meets the road, you actually have to get something done, and then people are much less willing to really step up when they need to. Rabbi Sinensky makes a similar observation. There's a bit of the internal opposition to the construction here. Not everyone really is getting involved. He notes also, in source number 6, few of the families that had made Aliyah, listed in Ezra chapter 2 and Nehemiah chapter 7, are included among those who worked on the walls. Right, so if you're really a Bucky in Tanakh, and you really have to be a Bucky sometimes, you start noticing that in all of these lists, there are names that repeat, names that don't repeat. You know, you can start tracing the family trees, etc. And if you look at the lists, you see there's not that much overlap. So it's one thing to be someone who's willing to make Aliyah. Okay, that's very nice. Are you willing to build the walls and to step up when you need to? No, not necessarily. This raises the possibility that many of the non-Jerusalem families saw the wall as none of their business, or even objectionable. After all, the project was likely to generate additional resentment among the Jews' foes, who, for instance, might no longer engage with commerce with the Jewish community. And so, why should we aggravate everybody? It's not appropriate to aggravate everybody. We don't really need the walls. We've been safe already. You know, we're not in personal harm's way. So, we see no need to get particularly involved. And only the Jews in Yerushalayim, who themselves personally feel the need for protection, only they stepped up. And there's a bit of a criticism of the lack of, you know, unity or communal feeling that the people might have had in this era. That's a possibility as well, to be reflected in this list. Now, we're not going to go and compare the lists in Ezra Perek Zion and this list over here. That would be, you know, very a tedious kind of exercise, but we'll trust Rabbi Sinensky's assessment of those two lists. I mean, with that, we're ready to at least begin with the lists. You'll see it's 32 psukim describing this. We're not going to say a lot about every single step and every single piece of these lists, but we'll make a couple of notes as they become relevant, and we'll try to make some progress in understanding what's happening with these walls. So starting with Pasuk Aleph, we're in source number 4, on page number 4, source 7, and we'll flip back and forth, like I said, to see different sources that might be relevant to different parts of this list as we go. Vayakom el Yashiv HaKohen HaGadol, Yashiv the Kohen Gadol, seemingly a new Kohen Gadol. Before, we had Yeshua ben Yotzadak, who was the Kohen Gadol. Now this is probably a descendant of his. The Achava Kohanim, so these Kohanim, got up. Vayivnu et Shar Hatzon. They built the Sheep Gate. So why a Sheep Gate? What's the name Sheep Gate? So maybe it's the sheep market. Maybe it's where you brought the sheep into Yerushalayim. Or where you'd go to get the sheep to offer as korbanot. And you'll see on the map, and this is, you know, we're going to have to be flipping pages a little bit here. Maybe we'll make a separate handout for next time. But the Shar Hatzon, or the sheep gate, you could look in the map in source 1 or 3, is really, actually, source 1 would be more helpful here, The Yashib Gate is towards the northeast of the city, and it's really close to the Beit HaMikdash, which, of course, if the point of the Sheep Gate is that you should get korbanot from there, so it makes a lot of sense. You shouldn't have it all the way across the city. It would be such a hassle. So the Kohanim start working on the section of wall near the Sheep Gate, which is where, near the Mikdash, which is where they, you know, are going to be focused. Hema Kidshuhu, they sanctified it. Ve'amidu Daltotav, and they put up the doors. Va'ad Migdal Hameya, until the Tower of Hameya. I think the Dat Mikra here says Hameya means there were 100 guards of the city. There was 100 guards in that tower. Ad Migdal Hananel. So we're not going to work on exactly where each tower is here, but they built that section of the wall. And there are a couple notes to make just about this first pasuk, and we'll move a little more quickly in the subsequent pasukim. But in this first pasuk, a couple of notes. First of all, as Rav Dov Zakan points out in source number 8, we're not going to read. This is maybe a political move, right? Why do you start with the Kohanim? You want to show how chashuv they are. The most significant people, they're the ones who, you know, start the construction first. That could be that they're the first on the list because they're the most important.
They're the most willing to do it also, I would think, because of God being the Kohanim.
So it could be that, right, they run the Mikdash and they are most invested, right? Both for protection. We're right near this entrance, so we really want to make sure that we're protected in case someone comes. Mm-hmm. And for the glory of the Mikdash to be part of a nice city. So it could very much be part of their motivation as well. Definitely a piece of the picture. What Dov Zakim also notes, which is interesting, is that El Yashiv, the Kohen Gadol, has some relationship with Tovia HaEvan HaMoni. Which you would think, if you have that relationship with Tovia, you might not want to participate in the building. And then again, it's really to his credit that he's willing to participate. And he says, okay, I have a relationship with Tovia HaEvan HaMoni. I disagree with him about this policy. So I'm going to build these walls. I disagree with him, even though we have a good relationship besides that. And he points to a pasuk in Nehemiah in source number 10, where it sounds like he was Karov Latovia, that they had a relationship and yet they were willing to participate in the project. The other note to point out just about this section is the phrase Hema Kidshuhu, they sanctified it. But we're not going to see that word again in the rest of the parak, that they sanctified this part of the wall. What does it say they sanctified this section? So it could mean, Rabag says, it just means that they prepared it. It doesn't mean that they actually gave it sanctity. Lekadesh means to designate. So they designated that that part of the city as a wall, or they designated it to eventually be sanctified as part of the city, maybe something along those lines. But the Dat Mikra says, well, you have to think about the geography. There in the northeast, was that part of the wall ever part of Yerushalayim historically? No, it's what the Dat Mikra says is the new wall. Because it's the new wall, they have to sanctify the inside of that wall as part of the city. Right? Otherwise, it doesn't have the Kedusha that Yerushalayim has for all of the various halakhic ramifications of being in Yerushalayim. So that could be as well. The point of sanctity is they're really inaugurating that this wall is going to be part of the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. And we'll see later on in Nehemiah, I think in Perek Yud, where there's a whole sanctification process of the new walls and the city within them. And so this might be a beginning allusion to that, that they're beginning the sanctification process of what's happening inside. And so Eliashiv and other Kohanim built from over here. Val Yado Banu Anshe Yericho. Next to them, the people of Yericho. They're not in Yerushalayim, but they're near Yerushalayim. Maybe they benefit from the wall as well. They're willing to participate. Val Yado Bana Zakur Ben Imri. So he built next to them. Veit Shar HaDagim, so the fish gate. Maybe a fish market there. You don't offer fish on the Mizbeach, but the fish gate, that's in the northwest corner of the city. So there, Banu Bnei HaSana'a. Hemekerua, they built it and they laid the beams. Ve'yamidu daltotav minulav u'brichav, and they set up the doors and the bolts and the bars of that gate. Valgadam hechazik meremot ben Uriah ben Hakotz. Valgadam hechazik mishulam ben Berechia ben Meshezav El. Valgadam hechazik tzadok ben Ba'ana. These are names that are going to be repeated again. You'll pay attention. You'll see them a little bit later. And the Malbim notes a bit of a different language that appears here. Right, until now, what word did we use for build? The same pasuk Aleph Bet Gimel. Livnot, to build. What's hechazik? Strengthen. Strengthening means there's something already there and you're fortifying it. Building sounds like it's new. which of course fits very well with the Dhammic we're saying, that they built new walls and new places where they had not existed before. And then at some point they started strengthening pre-existing walls that had already been there, that just needed a little bit of extra chizuk. Va'al Yadam, next to them, Hechaziku HaTekoim, the people from Tekoa built those. Tekoa also was in the region of Yerushalayim. Va'adirehem lo heviyu tavaram ba'avodat adonehem. And their adirim, which means something like nobles, you know, higher people in society, did not bring their, the translation I have here is nex, but it could also refer to, well, we'll see the interpretation in just a moment, ba'avodat adonehem, in this work. Right, so pashtus is, the simple way to understand this is to say that this is an example of people who did not want to get involved in the building project. Right? The avodah adonaihem, the work of their masters, means the work of either the work of Hashem or the work of the nobles, but the lower level nobles didn't really want to participate, and so they didn't. Rashi says, and as Rashi understands this verse number 14, that they didn't help in the avodat of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God's work of building the city, they didn't get involved. So this is a brief allusion to people who were not necessarily so interested in participating in the construction. Again, whether they had ideological opposition or they had practical opposition. Dov Zakheim in source 15, in contrast to the destitute ordinary townsfolk, the nobles of Tekoa had a vested interest in a politically weak Jewish leadership, and more generally in the preservation of the status quo, of which they were the prime beneficiaries. So you have to go figure out what's happening, you know, politically in this situation. But it could be that you take the elites and you say, we're going to change the status quo. And there are always going to be elites who don't want to change the status quo because they're elite in the current system. They don't want to fortify another city. And now that city is going to be the elites. And we in Tekoa are not going to be the elites. And that's going to be bad for us. Right? Could also be, as we've alluded to before, they may have had economic motives not to get involved. Let's not stir up trouble. Right, that might influence us economically, militarily. Better to avoid trouble. The Dhammiker tries to spin it in a more positive way and say, really, the idea here is that they, when it says avodat adonaihem, what they mean is the adirim did not force their workers to work for their masters, but rather they could do the work in the Beit HaMikdash. So, according to the Dhammiker, this is a positive. And there's no negative implication anywhere in the text. I think the simple way to read it is that these are people who opposed building the Mikdash here. I think it's a simple way to understand what's going on. And, you know what, let's keep going a little bit. We're trying to make some more progress on the list. We'll see how long it takes, and we're going to try to finish the list today. We're feeling the list phenomenon, right? Where it's kind of like, okay, we're going around and around the walls of the city. And you see, we're really just going clockwise through the walls and saying who built each individual section. So, Pasuk Vav, back on page number 4. Veichar ha-yishana, the old gate, hechziku yoyada ben paseach, umeshulam ben besodia. Hei mekeruhu v'yam yiduot al tozavim on alavu bricha. They built that gate, the old gate. V'yadam hechzik malatya ha-givoni, the adon ha-meironi, ha-meironon-ti, sorry. Anshei givon, v'amizpal, kisei pachat ever hanar. So, these people built this section, including the kisei of the Pachat Eber Hanar, the local governor. Apparently, there's a little place somewhere in the walls of the city or somewhere in Yerushalayim that the governor would, maybe he would stay there when he visited the city, and it would be in his honor. And so it's important that this part of the wall be fortified and protect the, you know, this house or this area where the governor would stay when he visited. He'd have a sort of guest suite. Val Yadav Echzik Uziyah ben Charhaya Hatzorfim. Val Yadav Echzik Hanania ben Harakachim. So the Torfim are the smiths, and the Rakachim are the perfumers, and they built their sections of the walls. Vayazvu Yerushalayim anachoma harechava. You should just note this word, vayazvu. Normally that would mean something like to depart the city, la'azov. Here it means to fortify the city. There are different ways to explain why it means to fortify it. But you have this word in Rabbinic Hebrew, in Biblical Hebrew also, I'm not sure, but in Rabbinic Hebrew you have a ma'aziva, which is a like a gutter, which protects your roof from runoff, from water, and so maybe there's a shared shorish over here. But other interpretations go in other directions. This Refaya ben Hur, who was one of the officers of a large district in Yerushalayim, half of the city of Yerushalayim, so some of the nobles are clearly getting involved. You know, if you're the sar of the half of the region, that's a pretty big deal. V'yada mechazik Yedaya ben Harumaf, the Neged Beito. So Yedaya ben Harumaf built his section, including next to his house, which of course is a great way to motivate someone. If you want someone to join your building project, you say, we're going to build the wall right outside your home, and you're going to be protected. And it's going to be very great motivation for you. And you're going to have that a couple of times. V'yada mechazik Chatush ben Chashavye, not Chashavniya. So another section, or maybe a double section, maybe they built more than other people, they built a double portion of wall, was Malkiah ben Harim, and Chashub ben Pachat Moav, and the Migdal HaTanurim, the Tower of Furnaces. Not quite sure what this refers to, but it's, if you want to look at the map, you could see where Tower of Furnaces and Migdal HaTanurim appears on the map in source number one. So you could see we're sort of moving down the middle of the western wall here. So maybe he's the leader of the other half of Yerushalayim. So, you know, the mayor of East Jerusalem, the mayor of West Jerusalem, they both are participating in their part of the walls. Hu ubnotav, him and his daughters. So maybe his daughters were involved in the project. Maybe they were strong, you know, capable of doing the manual labor. Maybe they were involved more in the designing and the management. It could also be that binotav doesn't refer to the person, but refers to the city. So, Banot sometimes refers to, like, outlying cities. So, Yerushalayim and Benotav means Yerushalayim and the little villages that surround it. So, it could be that people in the little villages also came to help. Or it could be a reference to the daughter, specifically, of Shalum ben Halochesh. Veit Shar Hagai. So, this is where Nehemiah first left from, in the bottom of the city, the bottom, the southwest corner. So, there, the Shar Hagai. Then, Hechri Chanun v'Yoshvei Zanoach. Came of Anuhu, they built it. The Elef Amaba Choma Ad Shar Hashpot, and they built 1,000 amot of wall. So a lot of wall. So they were definitely a big part of the construction until Shar Hashpot, which is already, you know, all the way on the east of the southern wall. So, you know, so basically this group built the entire southern wall of the city. It's very impressive. And continuing on the counterclockwise motion. So he's the leader of this city, Beit HaKarem. The gate of the spring, Hechzik Shalun ben Kol Choze, Sar Pelach HaMitzpah, Vitalelenu. So he built it, Vitalelenu, how does the translation here say? He covered it, Ve'yamid al tutav manu lav u'brichav, and he built the gates, Ve'it chomat brechat ha'shalach, and the wall of the Shiloach, the Gan Hamelach, of Adama Alota Yerot Mi'ir David, and up to the stairs that came down from Ir David. If you want to learn, you know, this is an interesting discussion in archaeology, what Ir David is referring to, what part of the city is Ir David, is what we call Ir David, the same Ir David that Nehemiah is dealing with. That's a whole issue. We're not going to get too deep into those weeds right now. But that's all of the southern, southeastern, and eastern part of the wall, where you have the Shiloach pool. And if you see Yerushalayim now, you can see a lot of these things. And the springs there, that's one of the major sources of water for the city. V'acharav hechazik Nehemiah ben Azbuk, not Nehemiah, who is our main character, a different Nehemiah. Sar chasi palach beit sur, ad neged kivrei David, until the graves of David. So it sounds like there was a certain part of the city where the royal mausoleum would have been. Right, where all the kings might have been buried, and you have descriptions of many of the kings being buried in Yerushalayim, so it could be that's the part of the city that he's building. Vad ha-brecha ha-asuya, until the pool, vad beit ha-giborim. Okay, the house of the mighty people, the strong people, maybe it's a barracks, a possible interpretation. Acharav echziku ha-leviim, the leviim came, rechum ben-beni, ben-bani, al-yado echzik ha-shavya, sar chatzi palach kelia lefilko, אחרא וחזיקו אחים בavai בן חינדד סאר חסי פלא קילא וחזיק על ידו איזר בן יושוא סאר המצפה מידה שנית מנגד עלות הנשק המקטוא. So עלות הנשק, the neshek is weapons, so it's all definitely an armory over here, definitely the way to understand it. And again, these people are just continuing their way up the eastern wall of the city, everyone building their respective section of the city. I just want to take a quick peek. Beit HaGiborim. So the Dan Mikra says Beit HaGiborim earlier refers to basically to a barracks from the time of David HaMelech. So maybe it's not a current barracks, but it was a barracks. Okay. Vayechazek al yado ezer, Pasuk Chaf, on page number 5. Acharav hechara, hechazik baruch ben zakai. Hechara is interesting. Ibn Ezra says, Hechara means he got angry. I mean, he got angry at himself. You know, I'm so upset about the situation, I'm going to get going. We don't want to talk about motivations, why people are building the walls. Some are doing it for honor, perhaps. Some are doing it for out of self-interest. They want to build their own section of the city. Some of them were inspired by Nehemiah in the previous parak. And some of them are just feeling so enraged by the state of things that they want to get involved. So he built Midashini Mina Mektoa Petach Beit Eliashiv HaKohen Gadol, up to the house of Eliashiv the Kohen Gadol. Acharav Ezekim Remot Ben Uriah Ben Hakotz, that's the name we already saw, that's one of the repeated names. Midashini Petach Beit Eliashiv at Techlit Beit Eliashiv. So he built from the beginning of Eliashiv's house to the end of Eliashiv's house, which means Eliashiv had a big house. Because it takes one person just to build the wall, protecting a single person's home, it's probably a big home. You're the Kohen Gadol, it makes sense you have a big home. But nonetheless. The Kohanim built more, so you see Kohanim are getting involved, Levim are getting involved, various kinds of officers and officials are getting involved. They built next to their houses again. The personal motivation is getting mixed in. Ben Ananya Eitel Beito, he built next to his house. Binui Ben Chinadad Mida Shenit Mibet Azaria Ad Hamiktoa Ad Hapina. That's a great one. You got to see this. This is a good parenthetical comment, but yesterday was Rosh Chodesh, so it's good to see. He built from the Miktoa to the Pina. So what's a Miktoa? Miktoa, the translation here says the turning of the wall, or the corner. So it went from the corner to the Pina, to the corner. It's a bit weird, meaning, did they do a whole section of wall? It's a possibility. It's not so clear. The Dan Mikra commentary says in source number 19, this is just wonderful, is that everyone misunderstands the word pina. Everyone thinks pina means corner, because they look in their dictionaries. It's very like a cute way of saying it. But if you learn Tanakh, pina does not mean that. It means a high place, something elevated. And we know that from Hallel. Evan ma'asu habonim, haital l'rosh pina. What's a rosh pina? The head of the cornerstone. The cornerstone is on the bottom of a wall. Rosh pina means the top. You know, the top of a high point. You know, this lowly rock that we all threw away turned out to be very high up. So, he says, from the Miktoa to the Pina means some elevated point. It's a really great observation, very interesting. I expect I'll never see Hallel the same way, but we'll see if it lasts. I guess it'll be 2 weeks, right? We'll see Hallel on Pesach. So, remember that. You know, a new word for Pina is a great piece of a great grammatical Dvar Torah. There are not enough good linguistic Dvar Torah, in my opinion. A great linguistic Dvar Torah would be the word Pina. Okay. Continuing along the wall, Palal ben Uzi mineged hamiktoa vahamigdal hayotim bibet hamelach ha'elyon asher lachatar hamatara acharav pedaya ben parosh. So Palal ben Uzai built a certain section near the palace of the king. You could look at the palace of the king and the Beit HaMikdash. A lot of these important areas are towards the east of the city, the southeast of the city. That's Ir David, that's where the palace is, that's where the armory is, that's where the barracks are. Clearly a lot of very important buildings on this side of the wall. We don't mention important buildings on the west. There clearly aren't so many, some guard towers, but on the east of the city is really where a lot of the important construction was. V'hanitinim hayu yoshvim ba'ofel. The Nitinim lived in Ofel. All the commentaries say they lived there and they built that wall. Doesn't say so explicitly. Ad neged shar hamayim, to the water gate. La Mizrach, which is on the east, v'hamigdal hayotze, and the tower that came from the water gate. Water gates, potentially because they'd bring the water, the Gemara says, they'd bring the water for the Simcha Beit HaShoeva on Sukkot up through that gate. Could also be that's the closest gate to get water. Yerushalayim doesn't have that much natural water, so you go down to the water gate, you bring up water. The same way you go down to the fish gate to get your fish. So this is the appropriate gate for this. And you go down to the Shar Hagai, the valley gate, to get out to the valley. So a lot of the gates are just named very intuitively. The Nitinim are interesting. Just as a parenthetical comment, the Nitinim were the sort of workers in the Beit HaMikdash, right? They had made a deal with Yehoshua under false pretenses, a breach shalom, they should be protected, and Yehoshua shouldn't conquer them. And then they find out it was really a fake deal, so Yeshua says, okay, you're not going to destroy you, we made a deal with you, but you're going to serve in the Beit HaMikdash for us. So it's interesting the Nitinim are here. The Yerushalmi says that the point of the Nitinim being on the Ofel was that they were very distant from everyone else. Right? They were on the outskirts. You know, we don't want to incorporate you into Jewish society, you're not really like us. The Gemara assumes that they had bad midos that we don't want to replicate. The in Sefer Shmuel, they want to get revenge on Shaul. Shaul had already killed, so they want to get revenge on Shaul's family and kill seven members of Shaul's family because of the damage that he caused them. And David HaMelech says, that cruelty is not a Jewish trait. Clearly, you're not proper Jewish people. And they've been distanced from Jewish society basically ever since. And this is an example of that. So they're on the outskirts of the city, and they built their wall, but they're distant from everyone else. They're on the Ophel. They're not with everyone else. I think we'll be able to finish this. Let's try to finish this description of the walls, at least. One more point is about the Ophel, is that some of the commentaries, like the Malbim, understand Ophel to be a fortified place. It's a particularly strong bastion of the city. Okay. The Tekoim came back before, and they're coming back again, because again, you have to double up different parts of the wall. Mineged ha-migdal ha-gadol, next to the great tower, ha-yotzev ad-chomat ha-ofel, to the wall of the Ophel. So, based on this, I might say that the Nishinim actually didn't build the Ophel, and the wall by the Ophel, and rather the people in Tekoa did. Maybe that's the implication here. Each Kohen, apparently the district of the Kohanim was near Shar Hasusim, the horse gate, and so everyone built their own wall next to their own home. Shar Hasusim is maybe where you'd go, maybe either the gate where a person could ride a horse through. Some of the Mefarshim say that it's the gate where the king would go out with his chariots. Could be where you'd buy horses if you wanted horses for various kinds of purposes. So that's the Shar Hasusim. That's the east gate, but now we're already moving towards the northeast of the city. So again, more people are building their sections, some personally relevant to them. Neged Nishchato means his lishka, his chamber. Again, up to the Aliyat HaPina, going up on the Pina, which again is this elevated place. And Shar HaTzon is where we began, the sheep gate. And so we've officially described going around the whole city and everyone who was involved. And again, you get the sense on the one hand that, wow, look at everyone who's getting involved. Across all measure of society, from the elites to the common people, different cities, different regions, Kohanim, Levim, Netinim, etc. And as Chaim Angel points out, there's a lot of repetition on this list. Clearly that everyone's getting involved. And some of the people who are getting involved are only doing so because of a certain sense of personal interest. But you get the impression that, and by going thoroughly through every single step along the journey, you also get the impression, correctly, I think, that the entire city is being encircled. Meaning this is going to be a very good wall. This is, piece by piece across the entire, it's not a circle, but across the entire entire circumference of the city, the entire perimeter is being properly fortified. So this is an ambitious building project and one that's going to eventually work out quite well for us. Now we'll pick up next time at the end of Perek Gimel but we know not everyone's going to be happy with this project, and Sambalat and again the enemies are going to continue provoking and causing problems for us. But we'll get there a little bit next week with that sort of description. Is there a class next week? We